the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to rightly see us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Have you ever wondered how it is that the LGBTQ agenda advanced so quickly? It seemed like all the pieces were in place, and just as soon as the activism began, it was like a wave that swept the nation, both socially and legally. It has changed hearts and minds. It has managed to make its way several times to the U.S. Supreme Court successfully from their perspective, and it's not stopping. Well, part of the reason for that deluge of change that has taken place legally and socially in the United States on the, well, every point that the LGBTQ activists are concerned about is money. There is a lot of money behind it. Not just corporate money, but private money too. In fact, a millionaire gay activist is setting his sights on religious liberty, at least according to Rolling Stone magazine. Bree Payton joins us to talk about that. She's a staff writer at The Federalist and author of a recent column, Ultra-Rich Gay Activist on Targeting Christians. It's time to, quote-unquote, punish the wicked. Bree, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Who is Tim Gill, and what did he recently tell the Rolling Stone magazine that caught your attention?
Sure. So Tim Gill is a software billionaire who himself is gay, and has dumped roughly $422 million in gay rights activism over the past 2 decades. And what he is trying to do since 2015, since the Obergefell ruling, which mandated that gay marriage be legal in all 50 states, is that he has turned his money, his resources, his attention away from legalizing marriage, because that, you know, fight is already won in his mind, to fighting what he calls discrimination laws. And effectively what that means is he is putting together these fake grassroots efforts and backing corporate-funded protests against Religious Freedom Restoration Acts in over a couple dozen states.
Tell us about those acts. They're based upon what a Religious Freedom Restoration Act that is federal law, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure. So Religious Freedom Restoration Acts are, there is a federal law, but a lot of times states will pass protections that are specific to that state. And that's what Tim Gill's foundation has been fighting. So for example, in Georgia, the legislature last year passed a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which simply is just asking, whenever a religious freedom case comes before a court of law, it just asks the judge to think about whether or not the government has a compelling interest to force a person to forego, you know, their free exercise of religious claim. So it's simply just asking a judge to think twice before it forces someone to participate in a gay wedding or pay a bunch of fines for not doing so. And so Georgia passed a law like that last year, but before the governor could sign it, Tim Gill's foundation put together a fake grassroots campaign, and they put together a bunch of corporations that organized a bunch of fake grassroots protests, and all of that pressure effectively forced the governor into not signing the bill into law.
What does this tell you? I recently saw the editor-in-chief of Ricochet, John Gabriel, quoted on Twitter saying the left won the culture war and now is roaming the countryside looking for survivors to shoot. Is he overstating the case?
I don't think he is. I mean, listen, the way that these religious freedom cases have been painted in the media with the help of these organizations are that Christians are these horrible, you know, bigoted people for not wanting to participate in a gay wedding. And I think a lot of times the conversation surrounding these issues is really quite sloppy, right? This isn't, it doesn't protect or help people to discriminate against other people. I mean, the Indiana pizza shop that was threatened with, you know, people threatened to burn down their pizza shop, they made it very clear that they don't discriminate against gay customers. They're more than happy to serve gay customers. They just don't want to be forced to participate in a same-sex wedding because they believe that that goes against biblical teachings of what marriage is. And I think that that's a very reasonable response or expectation to have. And I think what a lot of Christians are afraid of is that not only are their businesses going to be targeted, but their churches will be targeted also. The church I grew up in back home in California, after Prop 8 was overturned, they were really worried for a while about a gay couple approaching them to do a same-sex wedding and being involved in a long, drawn-out legal battle. So they just stopped hosting weddings altogether for a pretty long time, you know. And for someone like me who grew up in the church, who, if I was still living in California at the time, I'd probably want to be married at that church. It's just really unfortunate.
So you're saying this really isn't about who business owners do business with. This is about those specific cases where they're asked to violate their conscience by participating in marriage rites or a marriage celebration.
Yeah, exactly. They're going after the rights of those specific individuals who said, hey, I don't want to participate in a gay wedding ceremony because it violates my religious belief. They're saying, no, you're not allowed to have that belief. You're not allowed to have that right. You must participate in a gay wedding. If someone asks you to do so, you are not allowed to have a different opinion. You know, and they're doing that by stripping away these legal protections that are in place. And these legal protections aren't, a lot of times in the media, they're cast or talked about as basically legalizing discrimination, when that's not what it is at all. It doesn't say, you know, oh, you're allowed to not serve gay customers or you're allowed to discriminate against them. It just simply says, hey, if you're a judge and you're considering a religious freedom case, maybe think twice about this and think about the consequences of this and whether or not the burden of compelling this person to participate or pay fines or whatever is really in the public interest to do so. That's all that it's asking. So it's not this extreme anti-LGBT law like a lot of people like to frame it as, but rather it just gives Christians legal recourse to say, hey, maybe I shouldn't be forced to pay thousands of dollars in fines because of my religious beliefs.
Does it work both ways? If there were a gay owner of a bakery who was asked to bake a cake for a big rally celebrating traditional binary marriage,
right,
kind of thing, and
right,
they said no, would it work the same way?
Right. I mean, that's a really good point. And, you know, recently there was a bookseller in Boston who objected to selling copies of Hillbilly Elegy because he thought that J.D. Vance's words were, you know, dangerous and destructive and things like that. And no one had any objection or said, you know, oh, you're not allowed to do that. That's just fine. But somehow when a Christian says, oh, I don't want to participate in the same-sex wedding, you know, oh, that's completely unacceptable. So I do think that there is definitely a double standard here. And I think in both cases, that bookseller and a Christian baker or a gay baker, you know, they should be allowed to not participate. They shouldn't be compelled to participate or in something that violates their freedom of expression.
Progressives often bemoan religious people for forcing the morality on others. That's kind of the tag they've laid on us. Why can't they see that they are doing exactly the same thing when they are intent upon, in the words of Tim Gill, punishing the wicked, the opponents of the LGBTQ agenda?
Yet you are right in identifying that there does seem to be a rather aggressive zeal propelling these advocates into opposing Christians and opposing people who have objections to, you know, their lifestyle or their beliefs. I don't know exactly why that zeal is. I think perhaps some of it is, you know, just out of a feeling of not being accepted, that they kind of react in the opposite way. Yeah. Oh,
I want you to make this point one more time for our audience, and that is, you've said it several times here, that these RFRA laws, these religious freedom laws, do not compel outcomes, do not tie the hands of judges in these cases. They simply require that the judge consider religious liberty when making a decision in these cases. These are very modest laws, aren't they?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it just says that the government has to prove a burden. It has a burden to prove that the government has a compelling interest to force someone to violate their religious beliefs, and they must do so in the least restrictive means as possible. So, I mean, that legal language is just jargon for basically saying, hey, if you're a judge and you're deciding on a case like this, maybe just think about it a little bit harder and figure out the least minimally, you know, invasive or obtrusive way to impose this on other people.
Finally, then, Bree, I think we're not just talking about some gay activist. We're talking about someone who has already pumped, as you said, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars into this legal fight and into this legal crusade, if you will. That probably is the most concerning thing to many people, and that is how well-funded the LGBTQ agenda really is. Talk about that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, this is one individual who has poured $422 million into these campaigns and efforts over the course of two decades. And a lot of the efforts that we have seen in states like Georgia and North Carolina, where protesters objected and corporations, you know, objected to the transgender bathroom bill that the state legislature passed, a lot of these are very corporate in nature. They are very well funded. They are very well organized, and they're guised and dressed up to look like local grassroots efforts. And I don't know about you, but I think it's always a little bit creepy whenever a large conglomerate of a bunch of big Fortune 500 companies come together and start to dictate bathroom policies and try to strip away one's religious freedom.
Bree Payton is a staff writer at The Federalist and author of a recent column titled "Ultra-Rich Gay Activist on Targeting Christians, It's Time to, quote, Punish the Wicked," end quote. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. And you can follow Bree on Twitter at Bree_Payton. Bree, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary with Dr. Carl Fikancher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in hour two of Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilken and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.